Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Let me just follow up on this because I got a rapid series of tweets. Ben Bolin, formerly of the Palm Beach Post, now Boston Globe, Tony, I believe.
Correct.
Ben Bolin tweeting out a couple of things about this story. He says a BBC report says that the NFL says a team will be based in London within 6 years. An NFL spokesman says the story isn't accurate. That's another way of saying it's not true. Then he continued on by saying the NFL believes it will know more about the possibility of a London team by 2022, but still a long way off from putting a team there, if ever. That's from Ben Bolin. By the way, Union Jacks Joe, just to tamp down your uprising, says we don't want a franchise. We love our teams and the cities they're based in. Part of the love of the Jaguars is due to the love of Jacksonville. Way to play it, Union Jacks Joe. All right, there you have it. That's all for that for today, David. Seriously, I mean, you're a free agent. I don't know what the tax – I don't know if they do some kind of offset or whatever, but they don't do it like in the NBA. I don't think – I think you get paid in Canadian dollars when you go play for a Canadian franchise, and I think that is an issue depending on the strength of the currencies versus each other, but I'm probably talking way out of my depth right now. So I would think it'd be tough to lure people to play over there, though.
It's going to be very tough. I mean, think about people that have to come from the West Coast that have to travel all the way to London. I mean, it's just a lot. And the travel is the biggest part of all of it because the London team has to come over here and play. And then if they have to have a homestand or an away for 4 weeks, it just doesn't make sense. It just seems like we're trying way too hard, and it seems like it would be more of a failure than anything. Like you said, if you just have 16 teams go over there, play 8 games, I think that's the best way to get, you know, a lot of that revenue from that country, honestly.
All right. Now that the preliminaries are out of the way, let's get to the important stuff. How was your morning?
It was a funny one, I'll say that much. So I am passing my wife as she's coming in from dropping the kids off. I'm trying to head to the stadium, but I had to talk to her about something. So I said, hey, let's just pull into the parking lot right over here across the street. And I was going over and I backed my car in. Now, she had just drove that car the night before, so my rearview mirror is down. I can't even see behind me. But as I pulled in, I saw there was an open spot. Well, I missed it by a little bit, so don't judge me on my driving. I know how to drive. But I backed into the car that was right there, a little small, little bump. And she's like, babe, what are you doing? You just hit the car. I'm like, I didn't see it. The mirror was off. And she's like, well, the guy in the front seat doesn't appear to mind because he didn't even move or get out or anything. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's somebody in there. So I park the car, get out, go by his window. I'm like, hey, buddy, I'm sorry. You know, I backed into your car. It's a freaking mannequin dressed up with a hat, golf club, shirt, everything. I mean, it looked like a real person.
He's holding a golf club.
He is holding a golf club. Like, looks like he's getting ready to get out and go do something.
Yeah.
But he is just sitting there. So I tweeted it out. And it is, she's like, it's a what? I'm like, it's a mannequin, babe, a mannequin. She's like, oh, my gosh. So we're out laughing, rolling around in the parking lot, basically. I said, well, leave a note for whoever. So she starts writing the note. She's like, I'm sorry, you know, I backed into your car. Let me know if you want to, you know, change information, that kind of stuff. But the guy in the front seat appears like it's okay. Nothing's wrong with it. So he just wanted a picture with Dave, and he seems like he's a big Jaguars fan. So, you know, give me a call if you have any problems.
So he did call you just a few minutes
yes.
ago, right?
So there's a big tennis match going on in our neighborhood, and it happens to be the coach for the other team that's visiting our neighborhood. And he's like, I said, what is the mannequin for? What is that? He's like, oh, it's the team mascot. And I'm like, what?
This is why, and no offense, because tennis is a great sport, but this is why I think people might have an impression of tennis people as being tennis nerds compared to, like, some other sports. A mannequin is your mascot? What do you drag?
And you leave him in the car.
Wait a minute. It's a tennis team. He's holding a golf club.
I know.
All right? So maybe a racket or something.
But you don't even bring him out to, you know.
No, he's in the car. Now, I thought you were going to tell me it was like an anti-theft kind of thing, like the guy.
No,
you know,
or for like an HOV lane or right, something. But we don't have those.
So maybe he's thinking of doing some traveling or something.
Oh,
like that.
Oh my
so.
Gosh, we had the biggest laugh.
Just
you guys.
A tap of the bumper.
Just
though,
a tap of you're... the bumper, and he's like, I looked at it, I couldn't barely see anything, but you know, I'll call you after you get off the show.
Yeah, so Dave tweeted that out. David Garrard 9, check that out on Twitter. That's pretty funny with the big thumbs up. You're looking ripped today. You've been killing it at Retro.
Just a little bit. And yeah. It was actually our brand new Retro car that we had wrecked.
Is it so right? I'm oh, like, are you serious?
My first time driving it and I bumping into somebody's car is hilarious.
There you go. A couple more tweets coming nice. In from our friends across the pond. Kurt Smith says, we don't want one. No UK fan will change allegiance to support a new team. Plus 80% of us can't afford to travel. And Irish Jag says, who's going to sign for a team in a country with almost 50% income tax and a 20% value-added tax on top of that?
Wow.
So I guess Bernie Sanders might yeah. maybe Bernie would, but outside of that. All right, no politics on the program.
It's part of the big plan.
Yes.
Get Bernie in office, and now Bernie, we're going
Bernie,
to London.
Bernie's now. Maybe he'll be the ambassador to England. I don't know. Today, we've got the question of the day out there. Thinking back to the weekend, because I knew we'd be touching on the games coming up here in a moment, get your thoughts on them. You know, you look back in retrospect, should Aaron Rodgers and company have gone for two, right? Now, it's easy to say hindsight's perfect. They never got an opportunity to touch the football. Well, clearly they would trade that for a chance to go for two and put it all in one play. But the question we ask today is, would you be okay with your coach in a similar situation? No time left. An extra point will send you to overtime. Would you be okay with your coach opting to go for two and then living with the consequences, and why or why not? So you can tweet us your responses or post them on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at David Garrard 9 are the Twitter handles. John Osier going to join us in about 20 minutes or so. We've got Dane Brugler, NFLDraftScout.com. Last time we talked to him, he threw his phone in the lake. He was so upset with us, and we got a lot more coming up for you today. So be part of the program at 641-1010. You can also text us on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at that same number, 641-1010. With David Garrard, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
The Force is strong in my family. You have that power, too.
Chewie, we're home.
1010XL.
Hope is not lost today.
1010.
It is found.
92.5 FM.
Came across a book, actually, it was recommended to me. The book is NFL Confidential, True Confessions from the Gutter of Football. The author is Johnny Anonymous, a current NFL offensive lineman, a backup primarily throughout his, I guess, five-year career. Why be anonymous? I think I understand the reason, but in your own words, why be anonymous when you write this book?
There's just the most simple reason of, I kind of want to keep my job. And this is kind of one of those things that if the NFL knew who I was, and I don't think I exist in this league anymore. They would just push me out, and there would be no more NFL for me, no more paycheck.
That's from an interview that you'll hear on Friday. It sounds a little weird, a little distorted. This guy goes by the pseudonym Johnny Anonymous, wrote a book called NFL Confidential, True Stories from the Gutter of the National Football League, or that may not have the exact subtitle correct, but he also says on the cover of the book, in quotes, I blanking hate the NFL. I'm a professional football player, and I blanking hate the NFL. Dave, he's an offensive lineman, current offensive lineman, has played for maybe 5 years. He's changed a lot of details in the story. The book's been out since January 1st, and I did an interview with him yesterday, and there's a little bit of distortion in there. He was using a voice modulator to really disguise. He, you know, obviously Johnny Anonymous, he blocked his number so I couldn't see it when he dialed in for the interview. They wouldn't give me his number so I wouldn't know what city he's from and those kind of things. And pretty interesting book. I read it in one night, and it was, you know, a guy basically dishing on sometimes the hypocrisy of the NFL, the fact that the NFL manipulates the players, the fans, everybody, all for the greater good, which is money, and, you know, dishes on racism, homophobia, the concussion issue, domestic violence, all the hot button issues that you talk about in society and certainly in the National Football League. Pretty interesting. I talked to him yesterday. We're working on editing it up so it's at least airable, because the audio quality wasn't the best on his end coming in. So we'll air that Friday. But you were saying a minute ago, you know, you could have written a book about your time in the Jaguar locker room. Would have been a pretty boring book. Right?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of controversy.
No, first of all, this is super weird. But, I mean, he's a backup offensive lineman. How much information does he have? You know,
I guess if you're in the locker room, though.
Yeah,
you're
in a locker room, but you've got to be, like, in the middle of everything to hear all the things that are going on. And, yes, there are certain locker rooms around the league that probably have a little bit more juicier stuff going on. But it's... I mean, it's no different than anywhere else in the world and in the country. You know, it's just, it's guys. So are you going to have some guys that are homophobic around you? Of course, but that's going to be everywhere. Are you going to have some racism going on around you? Of course, that's everywhere. So, yeah, he's wrote a book about it. It's the NFL, so that's what sells.
Well, it is, but it was interesting to me because it did pull the curtain back. And I'll say this much.
Please say some things that he put in there that I could, you know, at least – discuss.
Well, one of the things he did, when you say you got to be in position, he really talked, I'd say 60% of the book or so came out of things that happened in offensive line meetings and there's interaction with the coaches. And, you know, you had an example like and we didn't talk about this in the interview, but it's in the book. Like if you've got a coach coming in from the college ranks, doesn't matter, he can win 10 national championships. Nobody's going to give him an ounce of respect until he proves it at the NFL level. And the O-line coach, and all the names were changed and all these the different details were changed, but the O-line coach had been a coach in college, and everybody's just nobody gave this guy any credit for doing anything, and they're always questioning him, and he always felt like his job was on the line, and then he would dump that down on his offensive lineman, but not the stars. The stars could come and go as they please. There was a lot of that, like guys – show up late, sleeping in meetings, and if they knew they had a position powerful enough on the team, they could get away with a lot of stuff. Now, that may not be the case in every organization, but he's giving his point of view as he's seen it in his time in the National Football
League. Okay, so that kind of stuff could possibly be true, you know, but it all determines on the coach. You know, if you come in and you allow guys to walk, you're still the coach. It doesn't matter if you came from college, high school, wherever, you're still the coach. So if you have the if you give the aura of authority, then guys are going to listen to you. Now, you're going to still have some knuckleheads that, yeah, they might be the starter and they might not give you a little bit of the time of day. But if you come in with good information, if you are able to coach them correctly, they're going to give you your respect. There's just some that are just knuckleheads. And, yeah, do guys fall asleep? Do guys not listen? Do guys get up and walk out? Yes, there are some guys that do that, and he may just have been in some rooms where those kind of things have happened, and they definitely happen. It doesn't happen like that in the quarterback room, I can tell you that much.
Oh, by the way, he described quarterbacks because they describe basically all the different types of players that are in the NFL, and quarterbacks fell under the boars, okay? The starting quarterback, what can I say about the quarterback? Nothing, really. Everyone knows your prototypical quarterback. Leadership, blah, blah, blah. They're all the same. No sense of humor, and they want to talk about football 24/7. Snooze. So he freely admits he was trying to game the system. Like, he fell out of love, not with football, but the way the NFL worked, the politics behind it. You know what I mean?
So he's not spinning this book in a positive manner.
Oh, no, 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 no. And that's why he's Johnny Anonymous, because he's still playing.
I mean, you can still have some, you know, some little scandalous type stuff, but then you can also have, you know, some positive things in there. Like the quarterbacks, he said, are a bore. I don't think I was a bore.
Well, no, I don't either.
But there's no.
Has he ever seen?
But he's saying there's no juicy stuff to talk about from the quarterback.
Maybe,
and that's okay. That's what it should be like. Now, I'm sure if he went to Cleveland, it might be a little different.
Maybe you're right.
Makes you feel like he probably wasn't with the Jets.
Well, so that's why I say it all depends on what locker rooms you're in, what meeting rooms you're in. Certain, like if he was here with the wide receivers back, you know, maybe in the 06, 05 years with Matt Jones and
Reggie.
And Reggie, it would have been a little bit different, you know. So I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get some money. If he's a backup offensive lineman,
certainly.
He's trying to have some money that he can, you know, once he's done playing, he can fall back onto this. He's got a book out, all that kind of stuff. And he's given some juicy things, which people want to see. Well, what's juicy happening in the locker room? So I understand what he's doing. You know, do I think it's right? Absolutely not. I hope he never, nobody ever finds out who he is. You know,
well, he said that. I said, are you pretty sure nobody's going to find out? And he said he never thought he'd play another down if they ever found out who he was. He'd be blackballed instantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd never read the book Ball 4, which was the first kind of locker room tell-all written about the 1969 Seattle Pilots. Fascinating book.
Yeah.
It was kind of just more behind the scenes, not only what went on in the clubhouse in Major League Baseball, but what it was like to be, you know, a relief pitcher on the emotional swings day to day. It was very, very, we had never seen that kind of journalism done before. So this was in that line. He had never heard of the book, which I found interesting. You know, the fact that he wrote this, nobody ever said, hey, this has a lot of similarities to that. But to me, it was very interesting. You know, it's one person's point of view, and that's all it is. So
there's definitely good stories that go on in a lot of locker rooms. And the fact that he's been on multiple teams, so he's been able to see the differences in locker rooms. There are some locker rooms like the Jets for me, the Miami, and then here, they were all different, you know. And so there's definitely some good stories that come out of all of them. So if he's been in enough locker rooms, he's got enough juicy stories to talk about.
And he freely admits that he is in, as he described himself, I think, in the 0.01% of guys that play in the league and actually hate the National Football League, right? And he thinks he's,
I don't know how you can hate the National Football League.
Well, he hates the fact that it's, you know, there's a lot of politics. Yep. There's a lot of guys getting used up and thrown out. And he goes through all the reasons in the book. But he freely admits, and this is, I'm not saying this is a noble thing, but he says he's basically trying to steal money from the league. He wanted to be good enough to make a team as a backup but not have to play and subject himself to the long-term health risks that came along with it, and just wanted to get along. And then,
that's not why he did that. He wants to stay a backup so he doesn't have to have the pressure of being a starter and having everybody count on him and have all those worries of, am I doing a good enough job for my teammates and all that kind of stuff? That's why he did that.
It could be.
And yes, maybe part of it is, you know, I won't get injured. I won't. But when you play football and you love football, you're trying to be on the field. But if you're scared, if you're worried that I might not be that good, then you do try to hold on because you still want to get paid.
Well, in the book, he described in 2014, and again, I'm assuming that year is accurate, but he's changed a lot of details for obvious reasons. Because you could go, like, for instance, he said, that year we lost to Cincinnati 27-10 to kick off the preseason. Well, no, you didn't, because I went and looked it up. Nobody lost to Cincinnati 27-10. So he laughed when I brought that up to him.
Yeah.
You know, so he's changed some of the details, but assuming that the year may be wrong, the story is that at a certain point, a couple of guys went down in the same game, and he was thrown in. And I'm wondering if you can figure this out, because he was a guard, and he was forced to play center, and really hadn't ever played center before, but they were like, gotta go, get next man up. And he actually ended up playing fairly well. And then he talked about the debate in his mind about, you know, am I a hypocrite? Do I now, you know, now that I have this chance, can I play well enough to get a contract and really get some life-changing money? You know, but, he, minimum salary is not exactly chopped liver, compared to the average median income. So regardless, listen on Friday, and you can give me your opinion on that.
I will definitely tune in.
But NFL Confidential, True Confessions from the Gutter of Football is what the book is called. And the quote on the front cover is, I'm an NFL player, and I freaking hate the NFL. They don't use freaking, however. question of the day, Dave, is going for two when an extra point would send it to overtime. Now, we realize extra points have become not the automatic proposition anymore as well. All things factored in, you said you're watching the game with your bride, Mary, and she said immediately before the play, they should go for two right now. What about you? How would you feel as a player on a team, if your coach decides to roll the dice all in on one play right here?
Well, as a player, I want to just go ahead and win the game right now.
Right then.
Because I'm starting quarterback. Hey, let's go. But when I was watching it, I was thinking, no, just go for one, get into overtime. The first team usually doesn't. It wasn't a high-scoring game, so it's not like
you wouldn't think
they were just marching up and down the field. Yeah, so
Right. You're
thinking, hey, you're going to get at least an opportunity to tie it again or win the game. So I was thinking go for one. She was thinking go for two, just because they had all the momentum of the Hail Mary. Everybody's pumped. Cardinals are a little defeated. So I could see her side too, and maybe you don't want to have to risk going into overtime. But in my mind, I was thinking go for one, get to overtime. You know, hopefully you get the coin toss, maybe on the second time too.
Which, one of those times,
which I
man.
Missed it. I think it ran to
it's
the bathroom.
To be 50-50, aren't they?
How do you toss the coin in the air and it just stays flat the whole time?
I guess it kind of slid off his thumb. I mean, it's not. I don't care how heavy it is. You think you can get it to flip one time.
It's so cold out there in Arizona.
The thing is, they didn't
fingertips.
Have to reflip it. You know, there's no rule. It's not a coin flip. It's coin toss.
Yeah.
The coin was tossed in the air. I think they did the right thing.
Yeah.
To avoid any suspicion. And then.
And what did I hear? It landed for Green Bay the first time?
No, it landed for Arizona both times.
Oh, okay.
So
okay,
it landed
okay.
for Arizona.
I would have been really upset if it landed.
What happened was the first time the ref had it, I think it was heads up. Uh-huh. And so Rodgers called tails. And so, because that's how they he does it.
Yeah,
that's his thing. So the next time he said, okay, we're going to reflip. And he put it on his thumb, tails up, but he didn't let Rodgers recall it. And Rodgers claims, well, I would have called heads because that's my thing. I call the opposite of what I'm showing. Right, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So Rodgers all upset after the game. We didn't get a fair shake. You lost both coin tosses.
Exactly.
It'll be, you know. And I'm not one of these people that thinks overtime is inherently fair. Like, you had a chance to stop them. I still don't think it's fair. It's better now than it was.
Yeah.
You just don't need a field
goal. Because that's another great question to ask, too. You know, do you think the overtime rules are fair? Which I think they are much better than what they used to be. If you could get down there close enough and kick a 58-yard field goal to win it, I mean, that's
– couple 20-yard plays
and
you're right
just
there.
Two first downs. So I think this is much better than the rules before. But, yeah, if you ask me, I was thinking kick it for one. I know it's harder now to kick those extra points, but I still was thinking go for one.
So you'd go for one now, but as
watching it as a player, but as a player
– for it.
I just threw two, you know, basically Hail Marys there at the end. We're pumped. Man, let's just go ahead and win this thing. You know, that's the way I would feel in the game just because my adrenaline's going. I'm ready to win this thing right now. So,
all right. Well, people can weigh in on that on Twitter today at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Coming up next, we'll sit down with John Osier from Jaguars.com. We'll find out what the latest is in the Jags search for a new defensive coordinator. That's straight ahead on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Johnny O in the house. Hello, John. How are you? Everything good?
Yeah.
We're just talking about the book. I don't know if you've heard of this, the NFL Confidential book. It came out. Anonymous NFL player wrote this book. It came out January 1st. True Confessions from the Gutter of Football. Tyler was looking it up on Reddit. And the best guess, because he does give some clues as to who he is, but he does change a lot of details. Apparently, a lot of people think it's David Moulk, who was offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'll say this, he does, I forget the exact phrasing he uses, he does describe in the book as his head coach kind of being a standoffish guy with the players, didn't have much of a relationship, like you didn't get to know the coach very well. Chip Kelly has been described in that way. So it's interesting. I said, I think somebody's going to figure out what it is. There's going to be enough clues in this book because he feels like, and David agrees, he's going to get blackballed from the league for peeling back the curtain on some things that they don't want talked about.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as sensational as you think. There's like no, although he did talk about drug use, he did say it was like a holiday when you got tested in the off season. Like guys. Like, as soon as they got tested, they come back to the locker room, like, fist pumping, like, yes, that's the one time they can get me all year, and they would blow it out that night, he said. So
there is some truth to that.
Yeah, well, there you go. See? NFL Confidential, that interview will air Friday. How you doing? Everything good?
Good, yeah.
How's your MLK day? A little family time?
Yeah, it was good.
Rest and relaxation?
Yeah, so we're here, we're back, ready to go.
All right. Defensive coordinator hunt continues. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of speculation, though, that it's ultimately going to end up as an in-house promotion here.
Yeah.
Is that where you think it's trending?
Yeah, you know, I said at the very beginning I thought that was a strong possibility because I know Todd Wash. I mean, we're talking about Todd Wash.
Yes.
you know, I think he's a good coach. I think he's probably ready for it. I sort of get that the perception is, well, if you were going to do that, why didn't you do it immediately? If you were going to do that, why wasn't he a defense coordinator already? How much is going to change? I get that argument, but I just think that from day one with this, Gus was going to try to approach it the same way he did Doug Marrone and Greg Olsen last year, which is to go through a process and try to learn and try to figure out what wasn't going wrong. I mean, what wasn't going right before, and see what the best solution was, to try to go in without a preconceived notion. So I think at the end, Gus has been pretty open-minded on that sort of thing. I think he will be this time. I would just be a little surprised if it's not Todd.
Yeah.
But that's just a gut feeling I've had since the beginning.
Right.
And it may be that we're standing on the field in Mobile next week and he's telling us something else.
Do you know if Monty Kiffin was here yesterday?
I don't know that for sure. I've heard and read that.
Okay. Because T-Wig got a tip yesterday from a friend of his. I don't know who that is, but said that Kiffin was in the building and it wasn't to interview for the job. It was more, like Gus said last year about Doug Marrone, to pick his brain.
Well,
right?
He's also, if you recall, I'm trying to think when it was. I think Monty was here during training camp last year, a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Gus is certainly a guy that Monty's certainly a guy that Gus knows. I don't want to say for sure, but I think Monty's been around at different times since Gus has been hired when Monty was not working for another team. So my sense is it's that sort of thing of let's decide the right direction and let's get as many eyes on the deal as possible.
Right, they're talking philosophy.
I haven't talked to anybody enough to know if I'm right on that, but that's the impression I get.
And, you know, look, I think Gus is a pretty open guy on this. When Doug Marrone came in last year, it was more to kind of just have a conversation and network a little bit. And
see what direction you wanted to go.
Right. And then they got to know each other. You know
what?
Maybe there's a fit for you here. Would you like to do that? And it worked out. By the way, any reason to believe Doug Marrone is not staying on as the offensive line coach?
I haven't heard anything to indicate that he won't.
Not me either.
I think he would. I mean, and again, with Gus being in the coordinator search, haven't had a big chance to ask Gus what's going on. But I don't see why Doug wouldn't be back unless he's got something else he wants to do.
He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy, though, that would bring in Jerome Henderson or anybody else unless he really wanted to see if this guy was qualified for it. You know what I mean? Because, mm-hmm. like, the feeling is, well, it's going to be Todd Wash ultimately. But Gus doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's made up his mind, then I'm going to go interview this other guy and string him along. Right? I think he'd be open to the possibility maybe this guy will blow me away and impress me enough that I'll consider him.
I think that's what's sort of tough for people to grasp sometimes is, you know, you see what you read and you assume that this is going on because it's gone on in other places. I think Gus is sort of unique in that sense that he wants to bring in these guys, talk to them, see if they're the right fit, and then find out, hey, does this guy mesh with Todd as a defensive line coach? Does it make sense? Or does Todd mesh with this guy and maybe this guy's another role, which kind of happened last year with Marrone, if you recall. It was people thought he was coming in for the coordinator position. People, you know, it wasn't sure what he was talking to him for. And then they sort of found, oh, okay, you'd be interested in being a position coach. That's something that appeals. Oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, it feels like it sort of went like that. And I think that's what Gus is trying to do, not close the door to any possibility and find out what works best and where he can find a comfort level and get the best people to do this job.
By the way, if you didn't know before yesterday, we should all know now that Reese's is the sponsor of the Senior Bowl. As they,
I've heard that.
They dropped a major chocolate peanut butter bomb on Everbank yesterday, and we partook heartily. But I don't think they want to rush the process with an artificial timetable, but do you expect by the time the Senior Bowl kicks off that the week of practice that we're going to have a defensive coordinator here?
Yeah, I would think. I mean, I remember last year standing on the field in Mobile talking to Gus about Doug Marrone and Greg Olsen. So that sort of felt all along like the timetable. I don't think that was Gus's timetable in his mind, but that's sort of, if if you're going to have a process where you talk to people and then try to let it, and then try to think about what you've heard and base a decision off of conversations, then you don't necessarily want to make the decision an hour if you talk to somebody. You know, you want to let it, okay, yeah, I heard that from this guy, percolate, you know. So if that's what he's doing, then the time frame would make sense that it would be about the same time frame as last season, where Jed was gone, and I think a couple of days after the season, and then the Senior Bowl, he had made his mind up about how he wanted to shape the offensive staff. So my impression is he's trying to go through that same process. So maybe that's the same timeline.
I don't have the full list right in front of me, but I could probably remember most of the pertinent guys. Yesterday we asked, our question today was, which of their own free agents you think is most crucial for the Jags to bring back? And if we eliminate guys like Avery Jones and Ryan Davis, who are restricted free agents,
right?
And Nick Jacobs is an exclusive rights guy. Out of the others, you probably know most of them. You know, you got Walters, you got Henny, you got Anger.
Actually, Walters is under contract, I found out yesterday.
Is he under contract?
Yeah, which everything online indicates that he's not. I thought he was a free agent, but he signed through, what year, 16.
So, oh, okay, well, there you go. That take one off the list.
So I would sign him.
Out of the remaining guys, is Henny? How crucial is Chad Henny at this point?
I think some of that's
Bortles?
Up to Chad. You know, and it's I think it's important. I think Dave can probably speak better on what another trusted quarterback, veteran guy with knowledge, means to a young quarterback. I think since Chad is clearly comfortable in a mentoring role. I mean, I don't doubt that Chad wants to play, but when he's in that role, he seems very comfortable with being the big brother, so to speak, for lack of a better word. Is it crucial? It probably becomes less crucial the older Blake gets. You know, the more that he has learned, the less he maybe needs that. But I think Henny's important because I think he's a pretty good backup, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to have a guy who can come in and play. And as backups go, he's a good player.
Dave, for you, when you were in with Byron, I mean, it was more of a competitive. There was no mentoring, I would think, going on, right? You both wanted to be the guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're not, you know, when you're the backup, you're not supporting the starter and preparing and all those things. But who was, was there a guy in your career? Now, I'm not talking a coach now, a player, another quarterback, maybe not even on your team, that really impacted you and helped your development more than anybody else?
Well, I'd have to go back to my rookie year. We had Kent Graham, who came in and was an old vet, a guy that really helped me learn a lot of things, along with Mark. But, yeah, I would say you would want to keep Chad Henne because of the cohesiveness in the quarterback room, to have those same voices that you can count on, because obviously they have a good relationship. I've seen them on the sideline together interacting. So I would want to keep him just because that position is doing so well and he's still getting better, that you don't want to change too much on him. And he's a young guy too. Like you said, as he gets older, it doesn't matter as much. But I do remember when we would have different backups coming in, I'd have to learn a new guy. I'd have to, you know, we'd have to get on the same page with our study habits, those kind of things. And you can bring some backups in that, you know, don't necessarily bring anything to the table. They're just trying to, you know, stay alive for themselves. They're trying to, you know, make themselves better as opposed to let's all come together and be better as a group. And, you know, I bounce things off of you. You bounce things off of me. Luke McCown was great. Luke would come in and I'd get in on Tuesdays, you know, ready to break down film for the week ahead. And he would be in there too as well, breaking stuff down. He would have his computer at home like I would as well. And he would just break things down differently and see different things, or he'd watch a different game than I watched and would come up with certain plays. And I thought he was great, as he was probably one of the best, you know, other quarterbacks, backup, starter, whatever, that I had been around. Just because he would do so much stuff, and he never felt like I'm trying to take your job, or even though he was out there competing and, you know, if he got an opportunity to play, he would try to assume it like he was a starter as well. But when he was in the backup role, he really, you know, help the starter, help me as much as he could. And that was beneficial, you know, because you're trying to do everything yourself to be better. But when you have that other voice in there that's, you know, seeing things a different way, it does nothing but help you. And I'm sure Chad is doing that.
So you think that comfort level is a big thing, man?
I do, especially since Blake is still young. You know, it's good to have that same voice, that voice of reason. Maybe Blake thinks he sees something a certain way, but then Chad can say, hey, just trust me, from years of making that same mistake, this is what you need to do in this certain situation, or this is something you should think about.
And I think Blake does trust him. I think that's the key there, too, is there's clearly a great respect from Blake toward Chad. And that matters in the sense of, you know, the guy can be as smart as he wants, but if the guy listening doesn't trust him or doesn't hear him, then it doesn't matter. Clearly, Blake listens to Chad.
All right, what do we got coming up on Jaguars.com?
We'll have on Jaguars.com Live, which I believe is 12:15 today, we'll have Allen Robinson on and
nice.
Senior Bowl director Phil Savage getting ready for the Senior Bowl. So, pretty good show.
Allen in town, or is he calling
in? I think so. I believe he's in town, but don't hold me to that. But in some way, his voice will be heard.
Excellent. We'll look forward to it.
All right, buddy. Thank
you. All right,
you.
John. There he goes. John Osier on Twitter, at John Osier, and you can read him on Jaguars.com Live coming up this afternoon at about 12:15 on the website. So watch out for that as well. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, and Fat Tony here with you. Still coming up today, we've got Dane Brugler from CBSSports.com, NFL Draft Scout. We'll get into some of the prospects maybe that we should be looking for at the Senior Bowl and who are some of the top guys in the draft. As our conversation got cut short last week, we'll pick it up with Dane coming up in a little bit. But coming up next, this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Let's go back to 1980, Super Bowl 14. Is that right? Did I do my math right? Pittsburgh Steelers beat the LA Rams 31-19 in Pasadena. Terry Bradshaw, the MVP in that one. It's one of the first Super Bowls I can distinctly remember watching as a kid. 1985, Super Bowl 19, San Francisco beat the Miami Dolphins 38-16. In Stanford Stadium, and the Super Bowl MVP, of course, is Joe Montana that year. Did a little research on that game, try to refresh myself on some of the details of what went down in that Super Bowl, because that was the only appearance of Dan Marino in the Super Bowl. And one of the things, they only tried to run the ball with running backs 8 times in that game and totaled under 30 yards doing it. So it was all on Marino's back. 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions coming off his record-setting 48 touchdown season. 1991, the Bills beat the Raiders. It was AFC and NFC title game day. Score the Bills against the Raiders in 1991. How many points did they beat the Raiders by, would you say, in that game?
Oh, gosh. 25.
25. What you got?
I'll go 24.
About 48. 51-3, the Bills beat the Raiders in the AFC title game. I don't recall that one at all.
But that was a little lopsided there.
Same day, Matt Barr's field goal with no time left gave the Giants a 15-13 victory over the defending champion Super Bowl champion 49ers for the NFC title. Of course, the Niners would go on, or the Giants would go on to beat the Bills.
I was watching that one.
Yep, with the Norwood miss. Famous birthdays for this date, 1967, Mark Stepnoski, offensive lineman with 5 Pro Bowls on his resume. Infamous birthday, 1974, Ray Carruth, a wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers, now in prison for murder. Jeremiah Trotter turns 39. Good interior linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time. Dave, we played a lot of fantasy leagues where we use defensive players, Tony and I do, right? So you get linebackers, tally points for tackles and different things like that. And going back about 10 years, one of the worst beats I ever took, Monday Night Football, I was down about 11 or so, and a typical game for Trotter, he'd score about 12, so it was going to be close. I was so excited. I was doing the afternoon show on the other network, got off at 7 o'clock. I'm going to drive home, get home in time for kickoff, and watch him pile up the stats tonight. Get in the car, 20 minutes later, there's a fight on the field in pregame. Jeremiah Trotter has been thrown out of the game before it kicks off. It was one of the most bitter defeats of my fantasy career. Your former teammate, born on this date, a wide receiver, turns 35 today. Any guess? Mid-2000s you played with him.
Oh, goodness.
Not a starter.
So, oh, wow. Then so many of them rolled through.
There were. Cortez Hankton.
Oh, that's my dog.
It's Tezzy. Cortez. And
he had a pretty good career up in Canada.
He did, actually, yeah. Have a nice career in Canada and had some good speed, as I recall, but he never really was able to utilize it here. I looked up. Yeah. He never averaged even 10 yards a catch.
He always had the ability. Like, you'd see it in practice. You'd see, you know, spurts here and there and training camp, that kind of stuff. But would never always put it together when game time rolled around. And but, you know, he had the build. He had the you know, he wasn't a super tall guy, but had the hands and everything. It's just, I don't know, sometimes when the lights come on, it's tough for guys.
My my former co-host on another network, he used to be a big Hankton guy. Always felt, yeah, like he was on the verge of the breakout season. And also, born in this state 23 years ago, 1993, Devontae Parker, who's going to be a beast, man. I looked up the numbers, Tony. He averaged 19 yards a catch this year,
yeah,
coming in limited duty after Devontae Parker, Miami Dolphins rookie out of
Louisville. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, had the foot injury, yeah, that kept him sidelined for about half the season, so he is going to be an absolute beast. The State in Football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you're in the market for a family dentist, maybe you need cosmetic work done, maybe you're into the Stop Snoring Somnomed Custom Fit Mouth Guard, 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
New England Patriots linebacker Jerod Mayo has been placed on injured reserve after a shoulder injury during the third quarter of the Pats divisional round win over Kansas City on Saturday, so he'll miss the rest of whatever playoffs the New England Patriots have left. Suspended Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon has applied for his reinstatement to the league. Gordon was suspended for 10 games in 2014 after a DWI arrest in July of that year, and was then he failed an alcohol test that led to him receiving an indefinite suspension from the league.
So you're telling me suspended receivers can't ultimately apply for reinstatement?
They are allowed.
Wow.
And Josh Gordon has applied, and I'm sure we'll find out sometime over the course of the next 6 months, because that's the way the NFL works, whether Josh Gordon will have that application accepted by the league. Former Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Antoine Randle-L told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette yesterday that he regrets playing football, and that if he could go back and do it all over again, he would choose to play baseball instead. Randle-L was a 14th round pick of the Chicago Cubs coming out of high school, but said his parents pressured him to go to college instead of going straight into baseball. Randle-L also said he has trouble climbing stairs, that he has some serious memory issues from playing the game. He is one of the over 5,000 former players that were part of the lawsuit against the NFL that settled for over $900 million.
Yeah, he had a chance. He got drafted in the 14th round of Major League Baseball, and his parents said, nope, you're going to college. You're not going to go, you know, run around the minor leagues chasing the dream. And he's like, man, I'd still be playing today, maybe, had I gone the baseball route. Who knows? Maybe he would have washed out in a couple of years. But, Dave, I've remarked on this. Tony, who's the guy who used to play for the Bucks? Had all the, you know, he was a Grimes, Randy Grimes.
Yeah.
Right? Offensive lineman, I want to say. Randy Grimes. Anyway, tons of injuries really impacted his post-playing career, Dave. Depression. You know, the story, we hear a lot of these stories during Super Bowl week. You know, the outreach programs, how the NFL and other organizations are trying to deal with these guys. And Randy Grimes had one of the saddest tales of all of them. So, did an interview with him. I said at the end of it, knowing all the pain you've gone through, knowing all the suffering in your life that you've gone through, if you knew it was all going to happen the same way, would you do it again? Didn't hesitate. He said, absolutely. I mean, yeah. And that was like, wow. Antoine Randle-L is one of the first guys that I've heard come out and say, no, you know what? If I had to do it all over again, I'd never go near football.
And that sounds so weird for him to say, because he has such a great career.
Very good player.
Yeah, you know, it's so tough to hear that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's not the same for everybody. I know for me, you know, injuries that I've had, especially later in my career, I would still do it all over again. I mean, I love football so much. I always say that if I was 5 inches taller, I might have been on the basketball court. But but still, to be one of 32 starting quarterbacks in the league, I mean, you just, that doesn't happen for a lot of people, you know. So I loved it. I loved all my time. Wish I was still able to be out there and still playing, you know, but there's nothing I would change about it, and I would not steer my son from playing football. I know he wants to play tackle next year, so
yeah.
I'm excited about that. You know, I get to be the dad over there on the sideline, just, you know, brimming from ear to ear.
Maybe you'll have some coaching experience by that point in time,
maybe so.
a chance, at least a possibility, that you're looking into hooking up with your old offensive coordinator. You're here. Dirk Cutter was your OC, right?
For a time. I was the first quarterback he had coming out of college. It was me and Byron, and that was the training camp when Jack made me the starter.
Yeah,
and it was his first training camp of. He's like, so do you think we could just keep Byron just to have a round for a little while? Because he was like, I don't know what to expect.
You gotta throw the starter out the window. You're gonna give me this guy.
Exactly.
Ah.
It turned out to be a pretty good move.
It did, and really, that's what got you guys the season and Jack the extension and all those things. But looks like maybe getting an opportunity to do some coaching internship down in Tampa, right?
Yeah, I think there's no better coach. I've had a few of them. I've had a few coordinators that I love. Shula's another great one. I'd love to, be able to work with him as well. But Dirk, I know that, I would love to be in, the office with him. He's a great mind. I know I would learn a lot. But I just want to see. I just want to see if this is an avenue, that I can go down.
Coaching quarterbacks?
Coach just, whatever.
That quarterback room, man. They got all the crab legs you can eat, from what I hear, down in Tampa.
And so I do love crab legs.
I'm an equal opportunity offender, just so you know.
It wouldn't matter because I did a lot when I was playing of teaching so many guys on offense, so many things, the receivers, tight ends, just – things that the quarterback is looking for, so it made me have to figure out, well, how do I teach them? How do I show them what I'm looking for? And I would do a lot of moves, of course I'd do it a whole lot slower than they would, but just anything, just because I want to see if this is an avenue I can go down. I know there's a lot of time that goes into coaching.
Sure.
It's totally different than even as a player.
Give it a try, though.
Yeah,
right?
Give it a try. I talked to Greg Jones, and he loved it. He said, there's a lot of time involved, but it's definitely something that he wants to, continue to do. So
NFL Confidential 2, Tales from a Coaching Intern.
There you go.
Yeah, you see?
I could do that, but I'd take the tape off.
Right.
I'd stand up as a man.
There you go, and put your name on it.
There you go.
All right. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk a little draft. Dane Brugler is going to stop by from CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. So we'll keep our eyes out, see if David Garrard may end up being a coaching intern with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before it's all said and done. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, David Garrard here with you. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
With the third pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Dante Fowler, Jr., defensive end, Florida.
You wonder who's booing there, right? Didn't it seem like a lot of booing going on there?
It's probably the other fans that wanted Dante.
That must be. Now, I'll say this.
They saw the shoes, and they were like, showboat?
Maybe that was. I was doing shows outside the draft hall last year in Chicago, and Jag fans showed up. They represented. I was very proud of the Teal Street guys and the Bold City Brigade guys, and they came out and represented. They circled up, did that whole 9 yards. So I doubt they were the ones who were booing the selection, but you're probably right, Tony. Maybe people who wanted
there's always somebody
Dante
bullying.
Fowler Jr. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, and Fat Tony here with you. Dane Brugler has got a new phone, and it's dry, and that's wonderful from CBS Sports and NFL Draft Scout. Dane, what happened? Tell us. We've kind of told the story a little bit, but tell us what happened as we were on the air with you last Friday.
Well, it's a busy time of year, so I try to multitask and give my dog a walk, and right by my development, we have a little pond, and so my dog must have saw a rabbit or something. He went one way, my phone went another, and basically the phone ended up at the bottom of the pond. So,
splush. There you go.
Phones don't float?
No, apparently. At least his doesn't. Did you retrieve it, or is that like something that in hundreds of years some archaeologists will discover and wonder why that's in the lake?
Yeah, that's basically what happened. I wasn't able to get it back, so I had to go and get a loaner phone, and some kid that's going to be fishing here in a couple of years will get a nice little present.
All right. Well, it's a good story anyway. And it was, we were wondering, because like, you're such a reliable guy. We're like, well, what happened to Dane? Let's call him back. Well, he's not answering.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good, man. It was funnier that it happened that way. Sorry, you had to get the new phone. But regardless, let's talk a little draft here, man. And, you know, you look for us, we're getting tired of being in a position where it's easy to narrow down the possibilities of a first-round pick in Jacksonville, because picking fifth, here they are once again in the top five. But that's the circumstance they find themselves in. So kind of starting fresh with you, when you look at that top five group of guys, I know you have Jalen Ramsey mocked to the Jags. A lot of people do. Joey Bosa would certainly be a consideration. How good of a draft is it? Is it a top-heavy draft? If you're looking particularly on the defensive side of the football, are the Jags going to really like their options at number five?
Yeah, I think so. You look at that top tier of prospects this year, and I think it's somewhere around pick six, pick seven, pick eight, that's where it kind of falls off a little bit. So if you're picking in the top six, seven picks this year, you have a chance to get a pretty good player. And it's especially true if some of these quarterbacks get pushed up to the top. You know, you see the Browns at two, the Cowboys at four. You know, if Jared Goff or Carson Wentz, if some of these quarterbacks go early as well, that'll also push some nice players to the Jaguars at five. So I definitely think they'll like their options, especially on defense. Laremy Tunsil, to me, is the best prospect in this draft, the left tackle from Ole Miss. I think he's a favorite to go number one, and that's going to push Jalen Ramsey, Joey Bosa, those types of players, possibly at number five. So the Jaguars will have options.
Talking about that number one pick, I know I saw some speculation today, and of course it'll be a story over the next couple of months because Tennessee drafted their quarterback last year. They don't need one. The possibility of them potentially trading out of that number one spot. Do you see the possibility of two of those quarterbacks going before the Jaguars are on the clock at five?
You know, it's certainly possible. If you don't have that quarterback, you have to go get him. So you look at the Browns, number two, brand new regime coming in. You know Hugh Jackson wants to get a quarterback. He said that the Browns do not have a quarterback right now. Johnny Manziel has played his last snap in Cleveland. So do they see a quarterback worthy of that number two pick? And then the Cowboys, they're going to be really interesting here because they're not picking top five very often, and so they have a shot to possibly get that future replacement for Tony Romo. And Tony turns 36 this offseason. They have to think that way, and they'll be coaching Carson Wentz, the North Dakota State quarterback, at the Senior Bowl next week, and so they'll get an up-close look at the talented passer. So you can't rule him out there. And, you know, with the Browns picking two and the Tennessee Titans open for business, you can't rule out a team possibly moving up to that number one spot if they like one of these quarterbacks bad enough, because they know they'll have to get in front of Cleveland to do so. It just comes down to whether or not Tennessee's willing to play ball.
You know, look, quarterbacks can come from odd schools. Just look at Tony Romo, Eastern Illinois, right? So it's not impossible to find one from a smaller school. But I think a lot of people, myself included, I haven't watched any North Dakota State football. I haven't seen a lick of Carson Wentz. And people are saying, really? A guy from North Dakota State could be maybe the top quarterback taken in the right circumstance, the top player taken in the draft? Give us the sales pitch. What attracts you to his game?
All the tools are there. You look at the size, you look at the athleticism, the arm strength. He's a very, very intelligent player. He really reminds me of, my comparison is a souped-up version of Alex Smith. Yeah, you see the athleticism, you see the smarts, but he also has a bigger arm than Alex Smith, and he's also a much bigger player. And, you know, you come back to, okay, well, how'd he end up at North Dakota State? Reminds me a lot of Ben Roethlisberger, the way he ended up at Miami of Ohio. Played wide receiver at in high school, and that's what happened to Carson Wentz. Had to play wide receiver because he's a baseball player, and so he was injured as a junior, and then he had to play quarterback as a senior. By that time, a couple of MAC schools were all over him, but at that point, he's a North Dakota kid, so he had already committed to North Dakota State and stayed true to that commitment, and then he was stuck behind as a starter, a long-term starter for the first few years. Became a starter last year as a junior, and then this year as a senior, missed the second half of the year with a wrist injury. So there's a lot of things going on with Carson Wentz, but if he goes to Mobile next week and shows what he can do, shows those tools, especially for Jason Garrett and that coaching staff, would not surprise me at all if he ends up in that top 10.
Dane, you mentioned a few moments ago that you feel like there's kind of a talent drop-off somewhere between 6 and 8 in this draft. Is Joey Bosa the only pass rusher that you would put in that group of 6 to 8?
Probably, but in terms of talent, I think I would include Noah Spence in there, and this is one of the more fascinating players in the draft. Former Ohio State 5-star recruit, but he got kicked out because of a drug problem, and he goes to Eastern Kentucky. You could make the argument he's one of the top five talents in this class, but there's a lot of baggage there. Now, I've talked to a lot of people who speak to his character. He's stayed clean the last year and a half, and so he's going to be a really interesting player to watch, see where Noah Spence ends up. DeForest Buckner, the Oregon, big defensive lineman. Some view him as a 4-3 end, some seeing more as a 1 technique inside. I think his best position is probably the 5 technique in a 3-4, but he's probably going to end up somewhere in that top 10 as well. He's a better run defender, but he improved as a pass rusher this year. We saw him use, you know, better hands, better understanding of how to use his leverage for a taller player. So I think Buckner is going to end up somewhere in that top 10 as well. But Bosa, to me, he's a clear-cut guy. And, you know, he might not be a double-digit sack artist in the NFL. I'm not convinced he's that type of player. But he's just so well-rounded against the run. He knows how to use his hands. For a player who's only 20 years old, he just shows a very advanced understanding of, you know, how to use the gifts that he has. And not only was he blessed with the physical ability to play the position at a high level, but he understands how to use those, the balance, the contact balance, the leverage, the hand tactics. It's all there. So Joey Bosa, not convinced he's a sack artist, like Chris Long. Similar to Chris Long, you know, he's not going to, you know, put up double-digit sacks every year, but a very well-rounded player. You can rely on him. He's going to play in the NFL for a long time.
Is that worth a top-5 pick? I mean, solid. You know what I mean? I mean, usually if you're looking for a defensive end in there, you're looking for a guy who's going to get the quarterback on the ground.
Sure, and I think he will, because he will disrupt the rhythm of the offense. Even if he doesn't get the sack numbers, he's going to be a guy that offenses have to game plan for. You know, guy, you put the tight end on his side, you know, leave the running back in the chip. You know, whatever you have to do, he's going to disrupt the rhythm of the offense. And I think that's the bigger impact right there. But, you know, you have to look at each draft class individually. And, you know, this draft class, while it has several players at the top that you really, really like, not every draft class has 10, no-brainer top 10 picks. But there still has to be 10 players that end up in the top 10. So Joey Bosa, you know, I'm not convinced that he's going to be J.J. Watt. You know, those comparisons need to go away. But, he's a very well-rounded player. I think he can make some Pro Bowls. I'm just not convinced he's that double-digit sack artist that you're looking for, you know, that answer, to the pass rush problems.
Jalen Ramsey, the player that's been mocked to the Jags to this point most often. Some list him as a corner, some list him as a safety. Where do you see his position fit in the National Football League, and why do you see him going to the Jags at 5 right now?
Well, he's a ball hawk. He's a playmaker, an outstanding athlete for his size, a huge wingspan. He really, you know, his 3 years at Florida State, he really played 3 different positions, from safety. He played a hybrid nickel position last year that I think that was probably his best position. And then this past year as a boundary corner, which, you know, he did okay, but I think he's much more natural in more of a hybrid safety role where he can patrol the middle of the field, use his instincts, use his range, and then go make plays on the football. I think that's his best fit. And so, you know, depending on what my team looks like, what my secondary looks like, that will determine where I'm going to play him. But I don't care. I just want him on my football team because he knows how to make plays. He's all over the football field. And, you know, you can win with players like that on your defense. Guys with that type of range, that type of ability, that type of, ball awareness, it's all there. So Jalen Ramsey, one of the top 5 players in this class. But, you know, it will be, depending on who you talk to, some will say corner. They want to try him there first because he has that arm length that you want. That athleticism, the leaping ability, but then some others will try him at safety before possibly moving him to another position. So it will be interesting where he ends up. It will depend on the team and the scheme. But, I all I know is I want Jalen Ramsey on my team. He's that much of a playmaker.
Dane Brugler here with us, CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com. Dane, the importance of the free safety position, how much is that growing in the NFL? Dave Caldwell, the Jags GM, said it's getting more and more difficult to find those guys that can play sideline to sideline. You know, it used to be quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, corner were considered the premium positions in the draft. Is free safety, if a guy is on the level of an Earl Thomas kind of player, is that in that conversation now in terms of importance in today's pass-happy NFL?
Oh, no question. And they're so hard to find. And, you know, this you go the past few drafts, the safety classes have not been strong. And I think you look at this safety class, and it's similar. You know, we don't have a lot of impact players, you know, that have the size to match up with tight ends and it would still come downhill and tackle the running back in space, but also have the athleticism to play the whole field and do the things that you need them to do. So it's very hard to find these guys. So a guy like Jalen Ramsey, that's why I'm keeping him at safety. That's why, you know, I want him there because I've seen him do it. I know he can do it. I know corner is especially important in today's NFL, obviously, but it's harder to find these safeties. And, it's, you know, sometimes you see a bigger corner and they say, well, we'll just move him inside to free safety. It's not that easy. You know, free safety is its own position with a different set of responsibilities that, you know, you have to be able to play in space. Not every athlete is able to do that and show the same instincts that you want, the same breakdown skills. And so free safety, no question. You know, if you don't have one, you're looking for one. And it's hard to find them in these drafts because you see the talent, but not everyone can do what they're going to be asked to do in the NFL. It's not easy to go from, you know, the Big 12 to covering guys like Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham in the slot. It's just, it's such a big leap for some of these guys. So if I can get a Jalen Ramsey in the draft, I'm definitely going to go that direction.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk to you a couple times between now and the draft again. But just to be clear, because you mentioned this earlier, do you think Noah Spence is the best pure pass rusher in this year's draft?
I could certainly make that argument. I mean, I think he's definitely in the top, you know, two or three, and I could definitely make a strong argument. He is one of the best pass rushers just with his ability to get off the ball, you know, beat the edge blocker and finish in the pocket. You know, I can make a strong argument that he is one of the best pure pass rushers in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, we know what's going to happen, as you suggested in your mock. What's going to happen is one of these final four teams in the playoffs that don't have a lot of holes is going to roll the dice on Noah Spence, and then he'll turn out to be that he's put all his troubles behind him, and you'll end up getting a top 10 talent at the back end of the first round. It just seems like the rich get richer in that department year after year. Dane, next week in Mobile, the Jags coaching staff will unfortunately be there again with the Senior Bowl class because you got to earn the right to have that coaching spot. We like the fact that they're going to be able to take advantage of maybe some intel, but we don't like the fact that they're finishing low enough that they can get this coaching spot. Who are some of the top guys we should be looking for at the Senior Bowl, regardless of position?
Well, it start off with the guy we just talked about, Noah Spence. He's a redshirt junior, but he has accepted his Senior Bowl invite, and he will be coached by the Jaguars on the South team. I'm not sure if that's you know, out there yet, but you know, if it's not, then I just broke some news that, you know, he will be coached by the Jaguars, so they'll get an up close look at him. They'll find out you know, how he takes to coaching, how he responds to NFL coaching. It'll be an interesting name to watch all week in Mobile. But you know, I think one of the benefits of coaching in the Senior Bowl is not exactly, you know, finding out who to draft, but it's finding out who not to draft. I mean, the Jaguars will be literally able to cross out names after a couple practices, you know, guys that don't take well to coaching, guys that, you know, maybe they're just knuckleheads, or, you know, they just don't they don't fit the culture or the scheme for what the Jaguars are looking for. So they have such an added advantage. I know this is the third year in a row. 2 years ago, we saw them draft, you know, quite a few players. I think they drafted four players in the Senior Bowl last year. I don't think they drafted any, but that's what I was talking about. You know, you have an up close look at maybe not who to draft, but who not to draft. It really narrows down their options. So, I think Noah Spence, he will be the top guy in that South roster. And so the Jaguars will get an up close look at him.
Interesting. And as they've pointed out, so, you know, a lot of it is just, it frees you up when you get to the combine. You don't need to re-interview guys for 15 minutes that you spent an entire week with. You know, that so that's the advantage as well. You've done some legwork, even if it's just in eliminating guys from consideration. All right, Dane Brugler, good stuff as always. Check him out at CBSSports.com. He's got his latest mock draft updated along with his cohort, Rob Rang, there. And they, like many, right now pencil in Jalen Ramsey in the number 5 slot to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Dane, glad you got a new phone. Glad everything's working. We appreciate you rescheduling and coming back on with us, and I'm sure we'll be reaching out soon. Thanks for the time, man.
That sounds good. Anytime, guys. Thanks.
All right. You got it, buddy. Dane Brugler here with us from CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. There you have it. Interesting about Noah Spence. He has a mock to the Arizona Cardinals, Tony. I can't see that being a guy the Jags would roll the dice on with the number 5 pick. But
no.
If he falls to the second round selection for you, which he
sure
might.
And you got the extra ammunition at the back of the draft this year, so maybe they look to move back in.
Trade back up into the first round?
If they do wind up taking Jalen Ramsey with the number 5 pick and feel like if Noah Spence is the best pass rusher in this draft, if they feel like they have an opportunity to go get him, maybe they would.
Even if he's the third best, yeah. Right? You're not typically going to get that guy late first round. And as much as anyone, you can't look inside a guy's head and heart. But a week spent with him is a better chance to vet him than the teams that will have 15 minutes to figure it out in the combine
sure.
Interview sessions. All right, there you go. Dane Brugler will try to do a little draft talk, typically on Fridays, but when you throw your phone in the lake, we have you back on the following Wednesday. Don't forget, this Friday coming up, the author of NFL Confidential, True Confessions from the Gutter of Football. A lot of people think it's David Mulk. Apparently, the internet thinks it's David Mulk, an offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles. Regardless, you'll hear that interview coming up on Friday. Coming back with David Garrard here, we'll look at the fan feedback spotlight, asking you today, would you be okay with your coach opting to go for 2, put everything on the line with no time left on the clock, if an extra point would be sufficient to send you to overtime? We'll take a look at that coming back and more. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, fun show today. David Garrard is a bad backer-upper. We found that out.
I am not.
But he may turn out to be a great coaching intern. We'll find out.
Yeah.
And who knows where he'll go from there. By the way, did they not, after the second week, did they not recognize you? You still got to wear that thing on your arm?
You know, I said, do I still have to do this? And she said, yeah, every time you come.
Every single time. You can stick that up there on the wall of shame right under O'Halloran's badge that he is.
Absolutely.
He is not happy about having to wear when he comes and visits us here. Thanks to Dane Brugler from NFLDraftScout.com. He likes Noah Spence as a talent. He loves him some Jalen Ramsey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, does he love Jalen Ramsey. Tony Pauline, we had on the week before, not as big a fan, doesn't think Ramsey's a top 10 prospect in this year's draft. So, hey, differences of opinions will be out there, but you'll see nobody more frequently mocked to the Jags, at least at this time of year, than Jalen Ramsey. Probably 90% right now, anywhere you go.
I was just watching his little highlight tape on my phone here.
What'd you think?
He looks pretty good.
He's an athlete, that's for sure.
And he looks like he has and walks with a lot of swagger, too. So.
Oh, he's got that, yeah.
Yeah.
He does. You know,
and DBs, you know, they need a little bit of that.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, once you get burned, you got to be able to shake it off and come back out and pick it off the next time.
Is safety, free safety in particular, a sideline to sideline guy, for lack of a better term, are they as important now as cornerbacks in today's game?
I think so, just because they're throwing the ball around so much nowadays. When you can have somebody like that, like Earl Thomas, that can go sideline.
They can impact all the receivers.
Absolutely, you know, because and the quarterback knows that he has to look him off a little bit longer than normal when a guy can really cover ground like that. But that makes you a little bit late, so maybe it still allows him to get a jump on the ball. But when you can have a guy back there that is that center fielder that can, you know, erase a side or, you know, really make a jump on a ball that normally would be a good throw and caught, when they can get up and defend it, break it up, or even pick it off, is huge. I mean, just look what Ed Reed used to do. When you have those kind of guys, it's big.
Today's question of the day, would you go for 2, or would you be okay with your coach going for 2 if you're in a scenario where an extra point ties the game, no time left on the clock, a la the Packers versus the Cardinals? The more you think about that Packers circumstance, Dave, Randall Cobb's in the locker room. We know they've been without Jordy Nelson all year, but the O-line has been shaky. I mean, you hit 2 huge fourth and long plays on the final drive. Janis had 101 yards receiving on that drive. On the drive, because they had a penalty. They
had
101 yards receiving on the single drive. The more you look at it in hindsight, the more you think, damn, man. I mean, they could have gotten the opening kickoff and marched it down and scored a touchdown and won the game, but all things being equal, they were kind of playing uphill. Yeah. Even though they led a large portion of that game, coaches are going to, for the most part, I think, shy away from doing that because it's hard to get criticized for kicking the extra
point. I was going to say, you just think of all the criticism that you're going to get for going for two in that situation when people are going to say, if you don't get it, you took this opportunity away from your team to be able to go into overtime and win it in overtime. It's the more normal thing to do. So you do take away a lot of that criticism from your plate when you do the right thing. But the way the momentum was going, like we were saying, they weren't really scoring a lot of points. I just think, now that I think about it, yeah, I think going for two in that situation, it looks a whole lot better now.
Justice Craigle on Twitter tweeted at me some numbers with the league average for where two-point conversions are, the league average for point afters, because you got to factor in your 94% chance to tie the game, so it's not 100% yep. chance to tie the game. The 54% chance that you win if you get the ball first in overtime, and then you factor in 50-50 on the coin flip whether you're going to get that. So half the time you're going to have a 54% chance to win. I would think half the time you're going to have a 46% chance. I would think that would kind of even itself out. But regardless, crunching the numbers league-wide, he says you have about a 6% better chance to go to overtime. Obviously, it changes depending on the dynamic of your team. How successful are you at going for two?
The other
team on the ropes, right? I mean, those kind of things, right?
It was 4 out of 6 on the year. On
yeah, so their percentage was good. Pittsburgh, as he pointed out, was 8 of 11 this year doing it. So if you have a high degree of confidence, but, you know, those teams who have Aaron Rodgers
in that situation,
you're like, well, we're going
yeah.
to overtime. We're going to beat you anyway yeah. with these guys,
but
right?
you would think from the 2-yard line, you know, he has a great chance.
You
of
would think.
Making
right?
the throw, running it in, something.
Something. So, Tony, what kind of feedback did we get from Jag fans in particular on this?
From Isaiah, yes. No guts, no glory. At least you tried. From Alex, yes, because Myers. From Irish Jaguar, beforehand, I'd be okay with it. Just win, baby. But if it failed, I'd be apoplectic afterwards. From Kevin, as long as Jags don't throw a fade on the try, I'm good with it, depending on the opponent. From Duval Doom, I would love it until it didn't work. I'd be insane with rage.
See, that you got to man up, and you got to either be with it.
You're for it or not.
Or be against
yeah.
it.
Yeah. From Adam, if Jason Myers is the kicker, absolutely go for two in the win. From Daniel, not okay. Better percentage winning the overtime coin flip and getting the ball first. From Black Dog, go for two. You have momentum and shock on your side, and you got the ball at the 2-yard line for a win in the playoffs. And from Eric, only in the regular season. Playoffs are too important. I know you may not get the ball, but D can hold two.
It's interesting. I was thinking about this about Jason Myers before we knew we were going to talk about this today. And I get it. When you miss an extra point, it's not just the point that you don't get. Sometimes it's the momentum. It throws you off sequence and all those things. So it's more than just that. But from a pure scoring standpoint, he was 26 out of 30 on field goals, and he missed 7 extra points. Let's say he had missed 1 extra point and was 24 out of 30 on field goals. 80%, not tops in the league, but you'd say, okay, showed a cannon leg, made 80% of his kicks as a first-year kicker, money on extra points, he only missed 1. You'd feel completely different. He would have scored the exact same amount of points for the Jaguars in that scenario. Now, you miss... depends on when you miss them, right?
Yeah.
It's certainly, you miss those field goals against Indy, you're like, son of a...
yeah.
Right? So, but it is odd how you would look at it, I think, if he could have scored the exact same amount of points with the exact same amount of opportunities, and I think you'd feel... you wouldn't feel like he was among the best in the league. 80% is not, you know, I would think is not... among the leaders by far in the league.
Yeah.
26 out of 30, you're pretty happy with them.
Well, when you just look at the numbers, then, yeah, you can say, okay,
yeah.
he's okay. But when you go back and look at the tape, and you're like, oh, I mean, come
is
on.
He better off having the season that he had, you know, where he had the higher field goal percentage, even though he missed the 2 clutch ones against Indy, right? It really all points to it's a mental thing
yeah.
because those kicks are generally easier than any of the field, most of the field goals you're attempting in the National Football League.
Yeah, well, you would give them somewhat of a pass for those extra points because a lot of teams, a lot of guys were missing them because they normally are just chip shots for them. And so now there's like, wow, there's a little bit more pressure for this single kick right here, for the single point. And so you would give them a little bit, but when you're leading the league or at the tops of the league, wherever he is, it's hard to give, especially when we went from Scobie and all the stuff that went down during training camp to this point. That's what, you know, weighs a little bit more on the Jaguar fans, I would say, and also that he missed those kicks. But
sure,
there was more to it than just, hey, we're looking for a kicker, and this guy's young, made some mistakes, made some bad kicks. When we had someone, you're like, now we should have probably kept him. I don't know. Who knows? So,
yeah.
And I, you know, I saw Scobie this a couple of weeks ago, and, I mean, it was everything that I thought. Going to a new team, being thrust right in right away, you think, yeah, you just make some kicks. That's what everybody thinks. It's a little more than that for kickers. It's definitely some mental stuff there, just like you said. There's more mental with kickers than with other positions, because you drop a pass, okay. But if you miss what the one thing you do, then everybody's down on you. When you have guys in your locker room yelling at you that you're blowing it for us, I mean, what kind of support and kind of confidence do you have after that?
He missed against the Ravens he missed against that ultimately got him cut, right? Wasn't that Pittsburgh playing Baltimore early, or am I wrong about that?
Maybe.
I want to say
remember.
But yeah. Put it this way. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yarder from Minnesota, and a first-grade class like drew him pictures and wrote him nice notes.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the Steeler fans didn't do that for Scobie. No. I'm just guessing that
didn't
come
did.
Down the line. By the way, I'll end with this one from Facebook. Tony said, no, I would not be okay with it because it puts the game on one play. It also tells the team you have no confidence in your defense. Well, what if you have no confidence in your defense? Right? I mean, what if everyone knows you shouldn't have confidence in the defense? It does differ depending on circumstances.
That game was
weird.
You're the
underdog.
It was a weird feeling game because, look, honestly, when they scored the touchdown, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah,
like
right.
the thought never crossed
neither
my mind. It was
neither
like, oh my gosh, they're going to tie this game.
I didn't either until my wife said something.
Right. So I wasn't thinking about it, and now that I am thinking about it, the Carson Palmer I saw in the third and fourth quarter of that game, I'll gladly kick it off to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, they made that kind of play in overtime. Carson looked shaken at the end of that football game. They wound up winning the thing on just a great play design and call from Arians that they've been saving for years, apparently, to let Larry Fitzgerald run that route on that play,
right,
which is pretty incredible that he saved it for that long. And the game-winning touchdown was a play that they had practiced 35, 40 times and never run.
So you're saying on that play where he broke all those tackles, that was designed for Carson to kind of be moving to his right?
He wasn't supposed to go right. He got flushed right,
okay,
and then the coverage kind of quit.
Because I was
going to
say, you normally tell your quarterback never make that kind of throw where you're throwing it from one sideline all the way to the other sideline.
Right.
But apparently he knew that those were all his guys were over there. He's like, I'm on the wrong side of the field here.
Yeah.
I tell you what, as soon as I saw that formation, by the way, at the goal line on that play they scored on, I did not like that one bit for Green Bay. You know, it's like, who are you? Everyone's in the backfield. I don't like this at all. Can I call three timeouts in a row? I did not have a good feeling about that. All right, Dave, we're out of here. Drive safely on your way home.
Thank
today.
You. I
Park
will.
Safely. Continued good work with Retro Fitness, RetroFitnessJax.com.
Yes,
right,
sir.
For more information, two locations going strong right now, so check out David and company over at Retro Fitness. Good to see you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right, we'll see you next week, hopefully, and we'll have more tales from the underbelly of the National Football League for you coming up. Thanks to Dane Brugger. Thanks to John Osher for stopping by. Thanks to our friends at Metro Rooter for any size plumbing job, in-home, commercial, industrial, you name it. Same-day service, weekends included. MetroRooter.com, 695-1911 for our friends at Metro Rooter. That does it for us. For Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, Joe Fortunato, and David Garrard, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime is next on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo!
That's great job!